This is KERA News. I'm Stephanie Kuo. HIV is no longer considered a death sentence in the United States, and that's thanks to antiretroviral drugs, which were first introduced 30 years ago. Some of the earliest survivors are growing older, and doctors are discovering new health challenges related to HIV. In 1993, Linda Malone was pregnant and soon to be married. She had also just been diagnosed with HIV.
I felt like my life was over, that no one could love me because of the way people had been talking about people who had AIDS, but how filthy and immoral it was.
Neither her daughter nor her husband ultimately contracted the virus, and Malone's doctor chose not to start her on any kind of HIV treatment. Back then, HIV drugs were crude and harsh on the body, and she felt fine without them. It wasn't until she was in prison 8 years later for a drug offense that her lymph nodes started to swell. Her CD4 count, which measures the number of infection-fighting white blood cells in the body, had plummeted too. Both were signs that her HIV had begun to progress.
They put me on HIV medicine while I was in prison. That medicine was so strong, though, that it caused me to have peripheral neuropathy. Like, every nerve in my body was damaged except my brain and spinal cord. I had this severe pain.
Today, Malone takes Complera.
One pill a day.
And her HIV is under control. She's 49 now. She's clean and working to become a licensed chemical dependency counselor. Malone also advocates for homeless people living with HIV/AIDS at Samaritan House in Fort Worth, where she lives. She's been on HIV medication for about 16 years now and says it's starting to take a toll.
We have managed to keep HIV patients alive for a very long time, but now they're having a different set of issues.
Dr. Anuja Gorpati is the interim vice president of research at UNT Health Science Center in Fort Worth. She's researched HIV for decades and is now investigating what happens to people living with HIV as they grow older.
There is cardiovascular diseases, metabolic disorders. They have also lipodystrophy, their abnormal distribution of fats in their body.
Older HIV patients are also at risk for depression. They're more likely to get cancer, heart attacks, and late-stage kidney failure are common too. Why? Anti-HIV drugs can be toxic, like being on chemotherapy every day for the rest of your life.
So the morbidity and the change in your life over time as these patients age is only going to get worse. And the burden of compounding those diseases is going to be a societal burden.
Today, about 4 out of 10 adults living with HIV in the U.S. are 50 or older. In 4 years, that number is expected to grow to 7 in 10. That makes this age group the fastest growing segment of the HIV population. Linda Malone is just about to breach that age bracket. She struggles with depression, has high blood pressure, diabetes.
I am experiencing some side effects with the meds now. Relocation of fat. But I still, there's something I can do. I can exercise. I don't have the money to get lipodystrophy surgery and all that stuff. But what I can do is exercise, eat better, and that'll help.
That's something Dr. Gorpati and her team stress as part of UNT's research. There's not a cure for HIV, not yet anyway. And until there is, she says doctors need to understand how to provide well-rounded, multifaceted care. The Fenway Institute in Boston, a national research and policy group focused on LGBT health, helps doctors do just that. Last year, the Institute laid out steps on how to better care for older adults living with HIV, screen for additional illnesses, help treat drug use, provide sexual education, and help strengthen social support networks.
A lot of them are living alone. They may have lost a lot of their friends to the epidemic, particularly a lot of older gay men with HIV. And
Sean Cahill is the director of health policy and research at the Fenway Institute.
And they're less likely to have kids as well. And so they may not have the built-in caregivers that elderly people in this country rely upon.
Cahill says perhaps the most important step is to provide culturally competent care. It's affirming, non-judgmental, and takes into account the unique issues people with HIV face. Like the fact that many haven't disclosed their sexual orientation or HIV status to anyone. Cahill says doctors also need to talk about race.
There's a huge amount of medical mistrust, particularly in the Black community in this country. And African Americans are disproportionately burdened by HIV. And so understanding the reasons for medical mistrust, but also ways to ensure people that as a healthcare provider, you have their best interests at heart.
He says culturally competent care is necessary as stigma surrounding HIV still lingers, a stigma Linda Malone still fights every day.
If I got cancer, people take care of me. But if I'm using the bathroom behind them and eating off the spoon with them and drinking out the cups with them and I'm HIV, some people just afraid.
It wasn't until Malone found her community at Samaritan House that she stopped feeling isolated, that she felt she could love herself again. She says she's made plenty of mistakes in her life. Neglecting her HIV or her happiness won't be another. Stephanie Kuo, KERA News.